This is News from the Peak. I'm Joe Mamlin. Well, 2022 marks the 50th anniversary of Title IX from the Education Amendment Act of 1972. Title IX prohibits discrimination based on sex in education programs and activities that receive federal financial assistance. Our next two episodes are focused on Title IX from two different but important perspectives. Today we hear about it from the front line, how it impacted coaches and players in girls' sports. On today's show, Maureen welcomes our own Liz Bullard and Coach Carol Plodzien, who is a Hall of Fame basketball coach working with the girls' basketball team at Fremd High School in Palatine, Illinois. She was affectionately known by Liz as Coach Plod and was a strong role model and influence on Liz in her life. They crossed paths as coach and player right about the time Title IX was enacted. Today, Liz talks to Coach Plodzien about her experiences at the school at that time, about her interactions with faculty earlier in her career, and how things have changed and progressed over the years, while reminding us why it's important to keep working to promote justice and equality in all aspects of our lives. The Illinois Basketball Coaches Association honors several individuals each year for their career achievements and contributions to the game of basketball in Illinois. One of the three awards is the Herons Award, which was presented to Coach Plodzien in 2022. On our website, you can read her acceptance speech and learn more about that award. It's going to be a great show, so stick around, and we'll be right back.
I just want to say that I'm just really honored to have you here today. This whole podcast got started when Maureen and I were talking, and we were talking about people we felt were leaders in our life that may not know it. And you immediately came to my mind, the impact you had on me. And I think a lot of that came through reflection as I got older too. Not only, you know, you are a Hall of Fame coach in Illinois, but to me, you were always respectfully and lovingly Coach Plod. And I had the privilege to play on your basketball and softball teams from 1972 to 1974. You know, that was the beginning, the birthing of Title IX. So we thought this was a wonderful mesh to have this conversation. You know, I could only look at when I don't know that I was fully aware what Title IX meant then. All I know is that we got to compete against other people, other schools, when my sisters who preceded me in high school just had play days. I know my mother did not understand why I had to get up at 5 a.m. to go practice. And looking back, I now know that's the only time they'd give us the court, the boys, to play and practice. But I didn't question it then. I just went, because that's when coach said we had to go. And so I'm curious from your standpoint, when I think about what was it like in those early years for you?
Incredibly challenging, but very motivating. You know, it was my opportunity to share what I knew and to help other girls experience that joy of participation and excitement and doing your best and learning new things. that's what it was for me, is to share all of that experience. And so when we first started, you know, a lot of girls didn't even know that they were going to have sports. Okay. We were still in that play day mentality. And when I came in to teach, I knew that the following year in 72, we would be able to have a team. And so, for example, we had an assembly day, so we didn't have PE that day. And I was upstairs with my kids, you know, taking attendance, you know, we're just sitting around the bleachers, and I saw Heidi Giesler, and I walked over to her and I said, "Do you play basketball?" And she goes, "Well, no." And I said, "Well, you need to." I said, "Look at the size of your hands. You can really handle that ball, you know?" And she said, "Really?" I said, "Yes." And so I was kind of recruiting like I did with you, you know, going down the hallway, trying to get some players who would want to play this game, this very important game that I have put my whole life into, you know. Mm-hmm. I think it brings so much to people and kids, and awards is today is just incredible.
Yeah.
I'm excited.
Yeah. I know early on, I was thinking about this, that girls who played sports in the early 70s had a lot of derogatory names thrown at them and were considered kind of weird. What was it like for you to coach, one, in a pretty male-dominated sport, and to fight what you thought was right?
It was noteworthy that you had to stand your own ground and almost demand the respect to have the equal opportunity of at least sharing a gymnasium floor. Okay. Mm-hmm. And grew from there that, you know, they would watch us play. And of course, were we the best skilled at that time? No, we were in the learning phase. And so they kind of left the gym looking over their shoulder, like, you know, shaking their heads kind of thing. And then as we began to play games and started to win, more people jumped on the bandwagon saying, you know, these kids are pretty talented. They're doing pretty well. It's fun to watch the games. And then all of a sudden, the boys basketball coach, who I had a relationship with because he was in physical education, and I began to ask him questions, you know, just to self-check kind of thing. And so he was willing to share his knowledge. And then I knew I was on the right track, you know, depending on his answers. And I thought, well, that's why you go to clinics too, to see if you're doing the right things, you know, or learn a few new things. But, so I took it from there and then gained his respect. So when it time came to share the gym, you know, although I had to continue to fight for facility time, he was willing, you know, to be a little more flexible, but it wasn't much.
Which is a great leadership skill, because I always talk about leadership is about relationships.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what you had to build.
Exactly.
And continue to do in your historic career.
Of course, the players took it from there too, because, you know, we'd get a t-shirt made just for our team or whatever, and they'd go down the hallway, you know, saying, you know, we're part of the basketball team. And that was putting a little pride in their court, you know, and they felt united, and it brought them more together because this was a first.
Mm-hmm. It was huge. It was huge. It was, what I remember taking away was, being so proud to be part of something that was cool to the school, mm-hmm. you know,
right.
In my tenure there, and I know this went on, we were undefeated. And I know that you went on to a 50 game undefeated streak?
Correct.
Huge, huge, you know, for a little school at the time anyway, to make it in the local paper, in the little Herald, you know, that was pretty cool.
That was awesome, because yeah. They really cover girls at all. There wasn't anything to cover, you know, so we gave exposure to the school because of our success. And noteworthy here that in 1977 we won third place in the first ever state tournament, and yeah. brought back the first ever state trophy for basketball, the District 211, both boys, men and women, or boys and girls. So yeah. We kind of put that school on the map, which was pretty special.
I was curious. You had so many obstacles in front of you. You didn't have uniforms. You didn't have playing time. You know, all of the obstacles you had as before Title IX and then after Title IX was being implemented. And what kind of kept you pursuing that and not just kind of giving up and just thinking this is really hard and just being frustrated with the kind of injustice of it? What kept you going?
Twofold. One, I want to play. I grew up with that thought in my head. I want to play. And I saw that in my kids' faces and hearts. And they were so excited to be part of a team, like you said, Liz, and to just perform and be themselves on the court. I mean, I was looking through some of my Title IX things here, and here's a perfect example. This was, I don't know what year, but it was recent. And some girl over at New Trier High School who played soccer said, I've been playing soccer since kindergarten. Okay. And she credits soccer for her independence and self-confidence. She said, soccer, she said, is what makes me Emily Miller. You know, mm-hmm. So you find yourself and what you can do. And that is the value. You know, so that's what motivated me. And when I saw my kids wanting to do the same thing, I just would do everything I can to help them have that experience because it's awesome.
Yeah. Yeah. You are way ahead of your time. And I know I've talked about this before, but you had us doing things that now are considered normal, like cross training. When we worked with the ballet teacher to work on our rhythm, our balance, to play in multiple sports, not just one. And you encourage that.
We also covered a little bit about the mental game too.
Yes.
How bad do you want to win? Then you need to do this work to get to that point. So in our sprints that we used to do, the lines, you know, if we didn't get under 32 seconds, you know, that's not championship basketball. And I remember all of you just pushing as hard as you could to do that, but we did. And that's what made us champions, all that training and conditioning mm-hmm. to do the work.
I will never forget the 8-second drill, the 8-second play. We had to get that ball in and get it in the basket within 8 seconds. And we did it.
And we did it.
And we actually used it in a game. It wasn't just practice. So, I mean, that type of development and pushing us made us want to achieve and made us believe we could do it too.
Believe is a big part. I mean, I think any coach with any team needs to have their players believe in your philosophy and what you're doing, that it will eventually bring them success in one way or another.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And coach, how do you define your leadership philosophy?
My leadership philosophy is based on communication, okay, and developing lifetime skills. So it's not just the skills within the game that you're coaching. It's also lifetime skills about meeting challenges and taking risks, stepping into new ideas and outside of yourself and your old ways, to be courageous, you know, and turn things around within the game. It also involves decision-making and adversity, you know, accepting some defeats and accepting some challenges that you're not always going to succeed the first time, but if you stay with it, it will make a world of difference. And that carries through life. So that was my goal.
Mm-hmm. Coach, I also remember learning empathy from you. And one of the biggest examples that sticks with me today, and I remember sharing this with my son, was we were on the verge of breaking 100 points when the scoreboard only had 2 digits. And I looked at some of our past scores. I mean, they were double digits over our competitors. However, you slowed us down and you put in, I got to play second string and others because we were already winning by a lot. There was no reason to crush. And the spirit even of the opponent then, we had won. That really stuck with me. Do you remember that?
I do. I remember that. And I've done it several times. There is one game where we did score 100 points, but it was because of the type of coach I was coaching against with a little bit, let's call it ego. So I let that happen, you know. And mm-hmm. But in recent games, I had my best player, Division I player, and I had to put her back in because we had no control. So she was in with all the subs and everything, and she had a breakaway layup, and we were winning by 60 points. And she knew just to slow down, pull up, and not score. And that was against Wheeling, our competitor. And a month later, I got this very nice note in the mail saying, what a great coach I am because of how I direct my players. And it was wonderful that Maggie did not go and score that and made us as a team feel so much better that we were not getting beaten up by somebody. And, you know, I gave that note to Maggie because, you know, it was her decision not to do that. And, you know, hopefully she learned that from me, but, you know, it's just passing down that good quality of making good decisions about yourself and others. You know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's what I saw in you. It was more about, it was a part about skill, a part about life and what mm-hmm. we took away.
It feels like it's hard to imagine a time where we didn't have sports. So I'll just put that there. Like, because people like you paved the way so that when, and I'm not that much younger, but enough that by the time I got to school, we had Title IX had been implemented. We had space, we had uniforms. So it's hard to imagine a time that we didn't, but it's also what, it seems like a mindset that it was a nice to have or that sports were optional, not realizing so much of life is learned through team sports and how much you brought to those teams to be able to be involved in sports.
Right. Oh, like that one picture I sent to Liz, and we were playing a competitor and they had yellow uniforms and so did we. So being the host team, we put on our pennies and played in the pennies, and everybody thought that was horrible, you know. And I said, well, we're going to do what it takes to compete. And, you know, if they can't afford that, I mean, we only have one uniform, so we're going to do it. And they go, all right, coach, you know, kind of thing. But there are teams where when that first came in, the schools did not want to fund or were prepared to fund, you know, uniforms and things for girls. And some of the schools took the freshman B boys uniforms and gave them to the girls. And then they had to wear t-shirts underneath those, you know, and some of the schools started like that. But I had looked here and I wanted to share this with you that the schools, and this is from, I believe, the Daily Herald, they did a study in 2002. Okay. Now that's not that long ago, from 1972 to 2002, right? And they said, this is what the districts are acclimating for girls and boys sports for budgets, all right? Every one of them, these are the boys' numbers that there's total spent on boys' programs. These are the numbers, 61%, 58, 59, 66, 59, 64, and they go all the way down in those numerical orders. For the girls, it's 38, 41, 33, 35, 40, 39, 41, 38, and they go down in that order. And that's in 2002. Now, why wasn't that higher then? See, there's still the fight, you know, and we're halfway through 50 years. I mean, mm-hmm. it's terrible. And then once everybody saw that printed, they're like, well, wait, why is this still happening after all this time? You know, so, things began to change quicker, but the fight was still there. And I had been teaching for how many years? I mean, I taught for 37. And so, I mean, still fighting that battle. Crazy. Yeah.
Didn't we hear something just recently similar to that in the Olympics where the women's weight room was so mediocre compared to the men's. And they had pictures of that. I don't know if this was in China or the one before that, but I remember that still we're fighting for equity,
right?
In there. So as you think about where we go today, what is still needed in your mind?
Well, I believe we need more female coaches, okay? Because they understand girls and they've been through the programs. They know what is available and they know the inconsistencies that exist today.
Okay.
And they're the same ones, unfortunately, but most universities have done a wonderful job in creating a facility that had men and women practice areas now that are equal and an arena that they play in. Okay, but there are some places that still don't have, like you say, the weight rooms and the locker rooms and maybe number of scholarships, all right, and pay for coaches and pay for, you know, their staff is way low compared to the men. So those are things that still exist, and getting women to stay in their programs now, I think, has always been a problem, but I hope that changes.
Because of all these reasons you just said.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah. So if you think about Coach Plod back in 1972, is there any advice you would give her?
That's a very good question. And I think just continue to be yourself as a coach, because I coach from the heart, and you can't change the heart, you know? I mean, what's in there is in there, and because of all my previous experiences growing up and wanting to play and my desires to create things, I would just say continue to be strong, continue to lead with your heart, and continue to mentor kids to bring the future more.
Another question that it's been sitting in my mind is, what were some of the largest evolutions, the biggest evolutions in the game for you as you coached?
Okay, one, gym shoes.
Gym shoes.
Not, we started out with the canvas Converse gym shoes, and they weren't that stable. You know, and the number one injury in basketball is ankles. So, you know, that's why we did a lot of stairs and jumping in squares and things like that to strengthen our ankles, because, you know, we didn't want any injuries. So, I mean, even at that time, there was a debate. Should I wear Adidas or should I wear Converse, you know? And I said, well,
Orange Converse, that were mine. You could buy them at Sears.
Yeah, right. And I said, well, you know, Adidas are slippery on dusty floors, and we didn't always have a mop to mop our floors. So I said, we're the Converse, and that kept us going. I think another big change was uniforms, you know, uniforms made for women, you know, that fit them decently and looked like a basketball uniform instead of those pickle shorts that we used to call them. And I think number of games increased. I mean, that's wonderful. And eventually, well, I always scheduled my own games. I mean, the athletic director does the boys, but I had to do my own games. I had to hire my own officials, you know.
Really?
I was the athletic coordinator, so I, you know, I was allowed to do that, but I had to hire my own officials. And then if one called in and said they couldn't make it, I'd have to go to my principal and say, now what do I do? And he knew a few other teachers or administrators who used to be officials, and he'd call them up and they'd come over, you know. And then to get scores and timers, we had some students doing that, even some parents. And then all of a sudden, you know, when Title IX came through, they had to give us a paid score and a paid timer. And, you know, so all of those things were big at that time, because, you know, you're always watching the clock because somebody's not running it right. And, you know, a lot of distractions instead of just coaching the game.
You said even the ball size changed. I never realized.
Even what?
The ball size changed.
Oh, yeah, the ball size changed. We played with a boys basketball. And, you know, because women or girls are better shooters, proven this, better shooters than men, okay, more accurate and higher percentages, we were pretty good with the boys basketball. But when the smaller ball came in, that really made a difference. You know, the game speed increased with dribbling and passing, and shooting was even more accurate, you know, and it just developed along the way. But the ball made a huge difference in our game. And of course, that 3-point shot came in, and it was easier to do that with, I mean, some of my players from the 70s go, I wish we had a 3-point shooting line, you know.
Yeah.
That would have been fun, but we didn't. But now I've had players shooting 40% from the 3-point line. I mean, it's incredible. And then we added more levels, so we got more girls involved, okay, and more camps that they went to improve their skills, and, you know, it just kind of snowballed from there.
Mm-hmm. What do you think of the, it seems like today, they start narrowing down and being much more competitive at a younger age and almost having to pick at a younger age to move, to feel like, oh, I got to get in high school. If I want to play, I got to play all these club teams.
Specialties.
What do you think about that?
Specialties.
Yeah. When the men came in, they started to do that because when the men became their coaches, they knew a few camps and developed a few summer leagues and got the girls playing earlier, and then enter AAU, okay, the travel. Yeah. And I don't know what the expense was at that time, and not many girls would go because it was something new, but I would always take my kids out to teen camps, and I would send them to different camps, like out in Iowa, okay, Oskaloosa, Iowa, we went out there, and Heidi was part of that, and Sonia Peterson, I don't know if you played with her, okay, mm-hmm. Went out to Iowa and learned quite a bit from that camp, you know, and they were really excited. So, and I worked several camps, so I would pick up on the skills too. But right now, you know, kids are playing in third and fourth grade, girls are, and they're on those feeder programs coming into the high schools. So the high school coach today is mentoring them, telling them, okay, this is, you know, you can come and watch our practice and see some of the drills that we do, and then try to implement those on the feeder programs, you know, so they're getting the basics sooner. And by the time they get to high school, they're really ready to play, you know, because right now, look how the game has excelled in skill level and just different plays and seeing the court better. And so the more they do that in the feeder programs, you know, the easier it is for the high school coaches, and you can get further ahead, you know.
Mm-hmm.
A lot has changed.
Yeah, a lot has. What else would you like us to know about your lived experience over the last 50 years with high school basketball, softball, and Title IX?
Well, when I took my kids to the University of Illinois teen camp, okay, this was like 2007, right? Because I retired in 2008. So 2007, we go down to the U of I team camp, and I stood in the gym. They had us in the IP facility, which has, you know, like several basketball courts. And I was standing at the end against the wall, looking across the courts. And there were like 10 courts. And there were girls playing, running, you know, you could hear them cheering for each other, and you could see them shooting. And then along the baselines of each court were the next teams waiting to get on those courts. And I just took a look at that, and I just thought, look how far we have come. And if there wasn't Title IX, this picture would never happen in front of my eyes, you know, and I was just so excited to see that. You know, and then I've been doing a little AAU, and you see the progress in their skills, and you see some Division I players there, and college coaches coming in. I mean, I went to an AAU camp in Indiana, and it was their showcase camp. And so here comes, you know, Doug Bruno and Muffet McGraw and all these college D1 coaches, and they all huddle around this one court where they had all the best players, you know. And so, you know, it was like picking apples off a tree for them. And I thought, the day has arrived where there's equal opportunity. They're going to, you've got the best coaches taking the best players and promoting them. And without Title IX, none of this would happen. None of it, you know. And even back in the early days of Title IX, you know, the girls played as hard as they could. They wanted to learn. They were eager. They practiced on their own. If I said, go home and practice ball handling for 10 minutes a day, they did it. You know, where recently on my 10 years ago, I told them to do that. And, well, I didn't have time, you know, because they feel entitled. They're already on the team. You know, I'm a starter. Nobody else can beat me out. You know, you go through different scenarios. I mean, how bad do you want it? And now they, we're in a almost dilemma because there are some college players, no, they're not going to play professional, that this is the end for them. Where earlier, they didn't have the next step. They didn't, after high school, there was no college. And then finally there was college, but then there was no pro. So there was no role model, so to speak. Eventually they appeared, but once the professional level came in, now your extremely elite players are the ones that are playing, which that's how it should end up, you know? Mm-hmm. And yet before all that, from high school on or grade school on, they're having that same experience, you know, and they may choose to do different things in their life, or they may just say, I'm done. That's all I've got, you know? So, I mean, it's wonderful to see over the years. It's incredible.
One thing that you said last week that really struck me and I thought a lot about later was that Title IX wasn't really about just athletics. It was about education. And I don't know if you could.
I do have some things on that. Equal opportunity earlier in the day, when before Title IX passed, women were only allowed to be nurses. Women were only allowed to be housemakers. They weren't allowed to go to college because they had to raise their families, so they were told. And so finally, a few stepped out and took that risk and said, no, we should have equal education. And so that when Title IX passed, they went for it. They started going to college and they started to become doctors and CEOs and, you know, rocket scientists and whatever their heart desired. But, you know, I have one stat here. Back in 2006, the women CEOs were only at 5%. Then in 2007, it jumped to 11%. So that's when the women started to get into the corporations and go for their dreams. And I mean, today we have female astronauts, we have female doctors, we, you know, they can do anything they want to do. And Title IX helped them get that education to go ahead and live their life to the fullest.
Mm-hmm. So you have been written up so much about your leadership in Title IX, but also like how you motivated teams. And, you know, we do a lot of team development. What is your secret sauce for motivating teams?
First is knowledge. Okay. You need to know the proper things to do. So what is the technique required for your task, you know, in business, or on the basketball court or on the tennis court? You need to have a clear vision and knowledge of what that is. Number two, how bad do you want it? I mean, do you really want to do this? Is this something that you're passionate about? Because if it is, the next thing to do is make a plan or do the work to get it. And that's the big question mark. Are you going to do the work? Some of my Division I players, I caught them cheating on their weights. You know, instead of doing 10 reps, they do 5. Okay. Instead of doing 3 sets, they do 2, you know, and I'd call them on it. And it's like, well, how bad do you want to be Division I or go to this college and play Division III or whatever? So you have to have the work ethic to be successful. And I know, you've got to monitor that I mean, people will be people, and everybody gets tired, and everybody, you know, wants to slack off once in a while. And that can't happen if your goal is to be a champion. Okay. And then making good choices for yourself, because there's off the court things that occur, like, you know, parties, socialization, rest, homework, family matters. I mean, there's a lot involved, and not to mention what happens in the school during the day. So we talk about focus, and we talk about, you know, maintaining good choices, because you are representing not only yourself, you're representing your coach and your school and your community. And I always say, watch what you do, because little eyes are watching you. And, you know, that kind of makes sense to them, you know, at least in high school. So, and then I always talk about mindset, that, you know, you can't let fear hold you back, you know, because you are going to have failures, and you really need to look into yourself and say, how bad do I want this? And am I willing to do all this work? And how long am I going to stick with it to make it happen? You know, it may take you a little longer than Liz, or it may take you a little longer than me, or, you know, we all learn at different rates, but the mindset has to be there that anything is possible if you're willing to do the work, you know, be positive and make good choices.
That's great.
It's really leadership 101, right, Liz?
It is. It is. I need to get you in front of some teams. I'm thinking back, Coach, about what you said. You know, I tell you to go home and do 10 minutes of ball handling. Coach, whenever you told me to do something, I knew the look I'd get if I didn't. So you had a deathly look.
I do. I call it the glare.
Yeah.
And I always tell my teams, you know, it's not mean. I don't mean anything by it, but it's just, I'm so focused on what I'm doing that you may get that glare, but because I'm holding my breath, so I won't say bad things.
That's right.
That is a leadership skill all in of itself.
It scared the crap out of me.
I have one kind of final question that I'd already asked you, but so Liz alluded to when we were talking about leadership and like kind of going back in our history and kind of figuring out who was our mentor, and we may not have known it, or we may not have expressed it to them. Did you know, and it sounds like it was not just Liz, because you have these incredible relationships with people that you coached all through the years, but did you know at the time the impact that you were having on these young girls and women, not just in basketball, but in life?
Well, no, you never know. You think you know, sometimes you develop a relationship earlier and you can tell you're making a difference, you know, but later in the years, they come back and they're just, you know, they're telling me stories like Liz, you know, and I'm thinking, well, I did something good. You know, I did my purpose. I helped somebody else be positive and learn about themselves and grow as a person, so that now they can contribute to others. That was my whole thing. And I do see a lot of them. And one, as a matter of fact, did tell me, they don't get it now, Coach, but they will later. And I'm like, okay. So, you know, I'm just really grateful that that happens. That's my reward. That in itself is my reward.
Yep. You had a huge impact. And I'm just one small voice in this huge pool of people you touched. So I want to thank you from the bottom of my heart.
You're welcome. And it was my pleasure. I was blessed to have you and all of the others in my life, because that also made me challenge myself to continue to grow, to continue to search for ways to motivate, to continue to develop my communication, you know, because sometimes I tend to be short on my words, because that's how coaching is. You know, you only have a second to tell a player what to do, you know, and for myself to really enjoy who they become now and see where they've gone in their lives, doctors, nurses, and lawyers. And I mean, it's just incredible. Just incredible. Mm-hmm. Reward for me.
It was because of you. I wanted to be a coach. And I didn't become a sports coach, but in everything I did, it had an element of coaching. Mm-hmm. Whether it was, I spent a lot of my career in learning and development and training folks and mentoring and being an executive coach. So I owe a lot of that to you.
Well, thank you. I'm very grateful for that, but thank you.
Thanks again very much to Coach Plodzine for joining us on the show today, and of course for her inspiring career where she's helped so many young people achieve success in so many ways. Please be watching for part two of our series on Title IX, where we look at it from a legal perspective and discuss a case that came 20 years after Title IX was enacted. We'd love to hear from you and get your ideas and your feedback. And if you'd like to be a guest on the show, please reach out to us on the contact link on our website. News from the Peak is a project of Grace Peak Strategies and is produced by Maureen Life, David Ram, Robert Riddle, and me. You can find the podcast and subscribe on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Anchor, Google Podcasts, Breaker, and Radio Public. You can learn more about us at gracepeakstrategies.com. Be sure to follow us on Twitter at Gray's Peak, and we're easy to find on Facebook and LinkedIn as well. This was News from the Peak. I'm Joe Mamlin. Thanks for joining us.
Yeah, I think I was thinking about it this weekend. I think the only reason I went out for the basketball team coach is that you I won't say attacked me, but you cornered me in the hallway. And looked up to me and said, "Are you going out? What's your name? Are you going out for basketball? You have to go out for basketball." And what you don't know, I don't know if you ever knew this, but the summer before our freshman year, Heidi Giesler spent, I think, a day with me on her driveway teaching me how to do a layup.
Oh my gosh.
And over again, we practiced because I couldn't get my feet right, you know? And
the only story that we didn't talk about today that we talked about last time and that Coach found that picture was you ball handling. And I wanted, so maybe we put that in the outtakes.
Yeah, that was, now from my viewpoint, and I'll let Coach say from her viewpoint, but from my viewpoint, what I heard is we had a school assembly and we were going to do our ball handling routine, which Coach had put together probably to help us with skills and also to intimidate the hell out of our opponents too, because we did it before games and boy, did it look good. And, but in doing it, our butts face the outside. And I think I sent you a picture that has that in it. And they said that was indecent. Coach, what was it from your side?
Right, so I had gone down to the principal because we never had a girls all girls assembly for sports. And he was like, "This can't happen. There's no, you'll be laughed out of the school," he said. And I said, "No, we won't." I said, "My girls are skilled and all this, and we could have several sports and, you know, just make it short and quick and just show the school what the girls can do. I think it's time we do that." And then we got into this huge raised conversation, let's say, and I was called an SOB. And I said, "No, that's not going to happen." And I said, "You know, this needs to happen." I said, "But I think this conversation's over," and I walked out. And then I went down to my department and said, you know, what had happened. And so they went down there to his office and just said, "This is going to happen. We need this to happen." And he finally gave in and we had the assembly. We did our ball handling routine. The place went crazy. And of course, like Liz says, we had to put our butts inside the circle. Whatever.
I don't know if you remember, I mean, as the girls on the team, we were so pissed that they wouldn't let us do it, that we were gonna shove feminism up their noses. So after the routine, we all went into the locker room and changed into our Sunday best and came right. out with some roses for you.
Yes, that was awesome.
Did you know, I've heard other people say they didn't know that that's what it was at the time. They just wanted to do what the guys were doing. Like they, like Coach said, we just wanted to play. Like it wasn't even about a big movement at the time. It was just about play.
Right. They just wanted to play. And that's where my speech came in of let me play, because that's what it's all about.